I mean, all I can tell you is that we're doing everything to, first of all, load manage those guys very well. We're trying to build training, build our structure of training in a way that they can sustain a season like that. First of all, we have to go through the playoffs, obviously. Otherwise, we don't have to talk about this problem. So that's our first goal.
Hello and welcome. You're listening to another episode of FC Überall, still the only English-speaking podcast for, by, and about FC fans around the world. My name is Robert, and this is episode 2 of season 3. And as we are approaching the European Conference League playoff games this week, I thought it would be a good idea to talk to another coach of Erste FC Köln. Since I was in Cologne for the last 3 weeks, I took the chance to meet up with assistant coach René Wagner at the Geisbockheim. Full disclosure, this was a very, very hot day when we recorded it, and at least I can tell very clearly that my brain was a little fried. Maybe you will notice that too. We recorded the interview also in a very echoey room in an office overlooking the training pitch, which did not really contribute to the audio quality, and I tried to make it sound as good as possible in the post-production. Just a heads up, I'm sorry that the sound quality is not perfect for this episode, but that's how things are when you're doing a no-budget DIY project like this podcast. A little side note, there is another person in the room while we were recording who quickly chimes in later in the interview. Just so you know, it's FC Köln's Johnny Walsh, the man who you will get to know in one of the next episodes. But before I give too much away, here is my conversation with René Wagner. Enjoy. Today, I am at the Geisbockheim, and sitting across the table from no other than René Wagner. René, how are you doing?
I'm good, how are you?
So, René, let's just introduce you. You are the assistant coach at Erste FC Köln for all of those who do not know you. You were born July 17th, 1988 in Dresden, Germany. You played for VfB Oldenburg, for the second team of Dynamo Dresden, as well as VfC Plauen, Bischofswerda, and then in the US for the Pacific Sharks, playing for a university team at the Hawaiian Pacific University. Is that all correct?
The order is a bit off.
Okay.
I actually transferred to HPU after Dresden 2.
Okay.
Played there for a year, and in that spell from 15 to 17, I was their assistant coach.
Okay.
So I've been there twice, actually.
And so then after you retired from playing in 2017, you went into coaching. How did that come about?
So the 2 years in Hawaii, I coached from 15 to 17, did my master's, and I initially went back to Hawaii with the thought of never going back again and never coming back again. Mm-hmm. So I basically moved to Hawaii with the intent of staying. I enjoyed the coaching job too much, so I had to make a decision, either Hawaii, where there's limited opportunities for a coach, or I go somewhere else where there might be some more options. So I decided to look for something else, found a job down in Florida, and was able to start with a small youth club, and then pretty fastly went on to coach at the DA there, and then at Barry University, which is a university down in Miami. And I did that for 3 years, and then after that I was lucky enough to go back to Germany.
You also were the assistant manager for Inter Miami Academy.
When I coached at the university in Miami, the new found club Inter Miami was down the road from basically where I would go from school back home. And I got in touch with the then academy director, Jason Kreis. We talked a couple of times, and then he invited me to be like an assistant for the U17s, U19s on a more flexible basis, because my full-time job was with the university. But I did 3 sessions a week, back-to-back, U17s, U19s. And then when he took over the second team, which was Fort Lauderdale in the USL 1, I was his assistant alongside another guy that was actually the full-time assistant. I was, again, just a volunteer kind of. And I did that the preseason, then Corona hit. So I was there in more of a flexible role in between the U17s, U19s, and the second team.
And so before we go then back to Germany, you then went to SC Paderborn. Let's stay there. You already said it, you had the idea of never coming back to Germany. What initiated that move to the US, or what was your motivation to go there for soccer and then in the end coaching?
So after I transferred back to Dresden, which is my hometown, and continued my second year of university, I got a Facebook message from one of those agencies that allow you to seek opportunities in the US. So they asked me, well, do you want to go? There's opportunities of scholarships, and they presented a couple options to me. And for me, it was more of a one-year type of once-in-a-lifetime experience thing. I wanted to go see how it is. Went to Hawaii, fell in love with that island. Mm-hmm. And when I had to go back, because I only had 1 year of eligibility to play, I had to go back to Germany. I, as quick as possible, finished my bachelor's. And then I was able to go back as an assistant coach to do my master's. Mm-hmm. And again, after those 2 years, I realized, well, the island is beautiful, but I enjoy coaching. So I had to leave because, again, there's no opportunities for coaches.
How would you say your coaching opportunities and experiences in the US have influenced your coaching in Germany?
Quite a lot, I want to say. First of all, I've experienced a lot of different perspectives that you wouldn't get if you just coach in Germany. I mean, when I was in Hawaii as an assistant coach, we had players from Spain, Norway, Sweden, France, Japan, mainland, Hawaii, Australia, bunch of different nationalities, and then there's different views on the game. So I got to experience a lot of new perspectives on the games. I got to experience a lot of different perspectives on life in general. I mean, I was a bit of a tight German. When I got there, I came back as a more of a looser German. And I think that allows me to take on the other person's perspective a lot of more times than I would have done it probably if I didn't have that experience of just seeing so many different types of people, types of cultures. And that's the biggest thing for me, because that helps me to understand maybe the other side a bit better. And maybe sometimes think more out of the box than be in this like one direction of the game that's been in Germany for forever.
What is your coaching philosophy?
That's a tricky, weird, and sometimes, I don't want to say unnecessary question, because there's types of playing styles, I want to say. So there's, I mean, obviously I came with Stefan here, so I'm a big supporter of being active, having the ball, playing out of the back, pressing high. So that's, I guess, the framework of what we're trying to do. And then in that framework, there's thousands of different variations of how you can actually play that at the end of the day. So for me, we follow that guideline of, okay, we want to be aggressive, we want to be active, we want to play out of the back, we want to be brave. And then in within that, we have to find our way of actually getting that on the field. And that's mainly given by our head coach. And then we're just trying to find solutions on what he's trying to achieve. And then our job is, how can we get that actually on the training pitch during the week? How can we get it in games? How can we help him play the style that he wants to play? And so I don't really have, and to be honest, I don't really understand the word philosophy in a soccer term. Mm-hmm. Because again, I think there's a variety of styles you can play. You can pick one, you can pick different ones if you think you have to adapt to every single situation. But in general, if you find a couple of buzzwords, brave, active, those kind of things, and that gives you at least a direction, and then in within that direction is going to be multiple ways of solving those problems that come with the direction you want to go into. And then if that counts under philosophy, I want to be honest, I want to be straight up with the players, I want to be direct, I don't want to fake anything. I've never played Bundesliga, so I can't really tell them how it is to be in that stadium. So all I can tell them is how we want to play soccer and how to be better in what our coach is asking from them so they get the maximum of playing time if that's their goal.
Well, I mean, by you saying that, it already seems like you're really reflecting on your role of what you have experienced in the past and what the current players are experiencing. So that is a very, emotional, but also a very personal perspective on it. I think the term philosophy is too big because it's too much in there. But maybe I can rephrase it in a different way. With whatever you do, if you are an academic, if you work in a job that you just started, or if you're starting to coach, there is always that moment where you have to jump in the water and you just do it. Has there been a person or an instance for you where you really felt like, aha, in the beginning, this is why I want to do that, that first fascination for coaching?
There's always that motivation of maybe seeing what you didn't see as a player. I wasn't even close to it, so obviously where I got now is where I couldn't even dream of as a player. So that's one motivation, obviously getting there and then staying in that realm of the game. And for me, the biggest motivation always was I wanted to coach the game at the highest possible level because I enjoy details. Like, I do enjoy working on small things. I do enjoy thinking about how we can maybe manage to get opportunities on the weekend against an opponent that does XYZ. How can we play against that? What do we need to do? How can we get that in a week of training? How can we implement those things without it being too theoretical, because that doesn't fly with the players anyways? So there, this balance, obviously that's now a problem at the Bundesliga level. With youth, it was okay, how can I implement some sort of idea and how do I actually train it for them to understand it? So I guess there was multiple instances where maybe players would come to me and say, well, we really enjoyed the training today, or we really enjoyed what solutions you gave us. And then you start building some motivation of, okay, I'm going to achieve more now. And then you just experience maybe acknowledgement from other people. And once you understand that what you're doing cannot be that bad because people want you to work with them, mm-hmm. then you start realizing maybe you can go further and further and further. And I mean, now I'm here, so it doesn't get much further than that.
So you say that also trying and failing is just a normal thing in the process of a player.
It's necessary.
Yeah, it's necessary.
Okay. I mean, we've done, even here, we've done many sessions that we thought, oh, they might work on paper, and then you go out there and it don't work anymore. And then if you're a good team, you adjust on the field, and players will recognize it sometimes, but you did a very good job. If they didn't recognize it, you changed something that maybe that wasn't planned before. But we've done multiple things that didn't work out at all, and then you just change them. Otherwise, I mean, how can you know if you don't try?
That really seems like it is very much in line with the narrative that the whole coaching team has been preaching to the press the whole last season. And I think it was a very successful season for all of you, not just the coaching staff, but the whole club. So I think, is it that approach of saying that failing is part of the process of growth building experience and then just taking it step by step, is that the thing that you wanted and that helped the team to overcome that post-relegation mindset?
Maybe, yes. I think that is not something that we do uniquely. I mean, I don't think there's any coach in this league that thinks they do everything right. Mm-hmm. I think they didn't, or they wouldn't make it to the place where they are. And I don't think no one would be arrogant enough to say that they do everything right. So I think it's part of the process. I think it's the part where, and that's a big part of Stefan's work, is how do you actually encourage making mistakes and how do you deal with the mistakes? I think that's where the problem is. I think everyone knows that there's going to be mistakes, but I think the authenticity of our coach comes in line when there's stress and maybe when other coaches wouldn't react as he does. Like, he becomes the strongest when the team becomes the weakest. Mm-hmm. So when they make the most mistakes, he's going to be there. And I think a lot of times you see coaches that when it's getting hard in the game or whatever, they maybe become a little bit inactive. With Stefan, it's the opposite. Once our team starts making more mistakes than before, he's going to come in and try to help them even more than he would if they don't make mistakes. So I think it's the situation where the mistakes happen is where the difference is, because everyone knows they're going to make mistakes, but how you deal with them. And everyone will say, yes, you're allowed to make mistakes and it's that phrase that I think every coach throws around, but it's what you actually do on a daily basis. And do you encourage mistakes, and do you actually sometimes thrive in them, or do you just say mistakes are allowed, but then the second mistake happens and you start bashing your players? I think that's the problem.
So that is a very clear responsibility for you as coaches for the club. What do you think are the other responsibilities towards the players at the moment?
For my role or in general?
Yeah, for your role.
I mean, for me, it's being respectful, being honest, treating them the way they need to be treated, mm-hmm. without babying them, without giving them too much space where they think they can do whatever they want with us. We are assistant coaches, yes, and we have a head coach that's very dominant, but he also protects us in a way that they know they can't really, I want to say, screw with us. And they wouldn't, because I think if we are treating them with respect and they feel like we're not trying to screw anyone, then they're not going to do it with us. So I think it's a mutual relationship of how you treat them, they treat you.
Steffen Baumgart is very visible and very active at the sideline of every game, like just the game day situation. And you're often seen with the headset. Maybe we can go into the more of the analytical thing, which I guess is your strong game. Tell us a little bit about what's going on there and how do you see analytics as a helpful tool in modern soccer?
Well, first of all, that role is Hannes and Hucke.
Okay.
So Hannes and Dennis. They're the ones that do that on a daily basis. On a game day, when I have the headpiece in my ear, I obviously know what the game plan is. I obviously have understanding of what we're trying to do, otherwise I wouldn't be here. But that's their main job. They're in charge of analyzing the opponent. They're in charge of analyzing our game. Us assistant coaches, we are in charge of doing our positional groups. So we have defenders, midfielders, and strikers. So we all have our players that we have responsibility for, and we do a little bit of video session with them ourselves. And on the game day, obviously, I know the plan. Hannes knows the plan. I see the game from perspective that's on the sideline. He sees us up in the stands. He does have other varieties of programs that help him to maybe understand the game a little more deeper that the eye can catch. So we are in constant communication about what's happening on the field. Plus, I get input from Stefan, Andre, Kevin, who sit next to me. And then we try to find solutions to problems together. So usually Hannes or I or Stefan would come up with a problem. We'll try to talk about it. Usually it's Hannes and me plus Andre and Kevin discussing possible solutions. If we find a solution, we approach Stefan and say, this is what we can do. If it's a more global decision that involves maybe a tactical change, it involves a system change. If it's smaller things, then you will see us go to the field directly and speak to players. If we don't have to go over Stefan because it's not a major decision. Everything that's major obviously goes through Stefan. And that's pretty much the role of me having a headset. I also have the iPad in front of me with the tactical view, so I see all the players at the same time. I do have the TV broadcast, so I can see highlight clips and that kind of stuff, like the replays. And I can go back and forth on those things. So we have opportunities to share, obviously, thoughts on scenes as well that Hannes sends down to me or I send up. And then we're trying to react to what's happening on the field, I guess.
You are 34 years old right now, and if you look at the rest of the coaching team, the core coaching team, of course, there are many more people who are working with you daily and make your work possible. Andrei Pavlak is 50 years old. Kevin McKenna is 41 years old. Uwe Gospodarek is 50, and so is Steffen Baumgart. What can these older men learn from you?
Maybe how to use a computer. But that's just based on generation. That's unfair to say because they maybe can use other devices that I can't. But that's pretty much all they can learn from me, I think. We learn from each other a lot, to be fair. I mean, Stefan and Kevin had big careers in the Bundesliga. Andre and I didn't have a professional career, but Andre comes from a perspective where he was a teacher. So maybe there's other things to learn from, how to maybe get certain topics through to the players. I have a background of a bachelor's and a master's degree, so maybe I know how to maybe structurally work or organize things or maybe be a little more analytic on certain things. So I think the combination of us is pretty much everything you need with pro experience. You have two people that went to university. You have Hannes that went to university. Dennis went to them. We have our athletic coaches that they all have something to say, and we have a head coach that listens, and he's smart enough to understand that yes, he is the head coach, but there will be areas of certain aspects of the game that maybe he's not an expert in, and those are most of the topics that you maybe don't learn as a professional player. That could be analytics, that could be the fitness side of the game, how can you structure a week. But he obviously has thoughts about all these things as well, but he listens to arguments, and then at the end of the day, if he believes that one of us has a better argument, he will accept it. And if we don't, then we don't. But that's the only thing maybe that they could learn from us.
Let's talk a little bit about you and Steffen Baumgart working together at Paderborn when you were working as a scout. What was different between your collaboration with Steffen Baumgart now versus back then in Paderborn?
Right now, I'm obviously on the field way more often. I'm on the field every day. In Paderborn, I wasn't on the field every training session. I also had other responsibilities when it comes to obviously scouting players and that kind of stuff. So here, I'm a full-time assistant coach. So that's obviously, from the role perspective, different than a scout slash performance analysis, which I did back there. I was at every game day in Paderborn as well, so away and home. So that was completely normal to now. I wasn't sitting on the bench, I was sitting in the stands. But the role itself is just different, assistant coach versus, I want to say, almost like a analysis, scout, performance analysis, multi-role. And yeah, I enjoy being on the field much more than being in the office. So I wanted to make that transition anyways. If it wouldn't have happened with Steffen, maybe would have stayed at Paderborn. I probably would have stayed at Paderborn because I had a remaining year contract. But eventually I would have wanted to be back on the field, mm-hmm. which I achieved, luckily.
Maybe let's stay on the note of scouting for a little bit. So Modest has just gone to Dortmund. We're recording this in the week that it happened. It really seems like SC Köln has the depth of a roster that can compensate his departure. So now the kind of scouted question towards you: how does one build a roster that really does not depend on a key player, with the example now of the situation that SC Köln is in?
Might be impossible, because there's always key players and there's always players that you cannot substitute. I mean, Tony is a player that, with his threat in the air, is, I don't think there's anyone else with that ability of heading a ball in the whole league. So obviously that's irreplaceable. Like, we can't get another Tony that, with the goals he scored last year, there was a couple of goals, I don't think that anyone else in the Bundesliga would have scored that goal. So that's impossible. And I think any other team has the same problems. I mean, even Bayern Munich with Lewandowski the last couple of years, we'll see how they do this year. But now they have Mané, another key player, so maybe he's going to be now the one that they can't replace. So there's always going to be players that you can't replace. I mean, we have players like Jonas Hector, impossible to replace. And that's, I think, just normal. And I guess if you have all the money in the world, you can play a team, or you can pick a team with 20 key players, then you can replace them all. But if you don't have those financial possibilities, I guess then you have to find some positions or some players that are available to you that could be a key player, and then build anything or everything around it. And then sometimes you get players that are going to be key players and you didn't even think of them as key players. I mean, a good example is Salih Özcan, who was on and off starting for the last couple of years, and then new coach, new mentality, maybe new playing style, all of a sudden this guy is, you couldn't even think about him without the starting 11. So now he becomes a key player, and that's the job of us, to, in the perfect world, have 20 key players and maybe just three arrived here when they were transferred to us, but the other 17 we made key players. That'd be cool.
Maybe the word replacing is kind of idealistic, I would say. Like, that is not what it's about. It's about fixing problems, facing challenges, yeah. Strategic challenges, and putting players in positions where they can actually do what you think they can do according to their capabilities. Where do you see, let's just stay with the striker position. Who do you see currently fixing the problem of the space that Tony is leaving behind?
Time will show that. Obviously, this weekend, Flo had the role of Tony as like a target striker, strong in the box. He had a couple opportunities that he could have scored. And the most important thing for us is that he got in those positions, if he scores them or not. Right now is not a problem for us, because obviously for his first Bundesliga game, he did a terrific job doing that. We have Stefan Tigges, who is a similar player type, also tall, strong in the box, runs like an animal up front. We have Tim, similar, maybe a bit faster, top speed, maybe not as built as these other two guys, but then he has other strength. We have Jan, we have Sargis, so we have multiple different profiles of strikers that could all in their way replace Tony, and in conclusion, or in all togetherness, hopefully they will replace 20 goals of Tony. And that's now our job. How can we put those guys in positions where then maybe we can score, where we can maybe divide those 20 goals or 22 goals of Tony on 8 shoulders, which would be 4 players, or maybe even 2, or maybe even 3 of those players score together 30 goals and Tony just freed something up and another player is thriving. But that's just in the future and time will show. But now we're just trying to make decisions that are logical and obviously are not emotionally influenced by Tony leaving, which doesn't help us anyway. So for now, we thought Flo together with Jan would be our best chance to win that game. Next week it might be different. Mm-hmm. And that's our job to decide that on a week-to-week basis. But obviously Tony's a player that would be hard to replace.
But then change is always chance for something new. Well, I have to ask this question because a lot of people ask me to. 87, in 92, in 97, and in 2017, FC Köln was going international and then going down in the league, facing relegation or almost relegation. And the fans are scared. What is your response? Is there hope?
It actually happened 4 times. Same thing. Really? I didn't even know. I just knew about 2017.
Yeah. The first time in the list, whatever it was, it happened as well.
Yeah. So it happened 4 times. And they were, well, that's funny. Looks like a curse to me, but well, we're here to break that one. I mean, all I can tell you is that we're doing everything to, first of all, load manage those guys very well. We're trying to build training, build our structure of training in a way that they can sustain a season like that. First of all, we have to go through the playoffs, obviously. Otherwise, we don't have to talk about this problem. So that's our first goal. But I think in general, I mean, our management did a very good job in getting players this year. First of all, for Stefan's style of play, or they on paper, they fit well. And we saw players like Linton had a couple minutes. I think he got some speed in him. We have a player like Tigges from Dortmund who has the strength of a Tony and maybe the pressing power of a Jan, not if that fast, but he has a lot of volume when he presses. We have Eric, someone very, very, very interesting on the six that could maybe in the future replace the likes of Sally Ochan. We have Christian Petersen, a very, very solid replacement for Jannes Horn, who can give Jonas some relief if he needs it, who can play inside, who can maybe push Jonas a position forward in times when we need it. So that's someone that already proved in the last 2 games that he can actually be a player for us that can have a lot of minutes. We have with Dennis, a player that has a lot of potential for the future as well, comes from the fourth division, but I just talked to him today, we did some video. He definitely has what it takes to play for us in this league, and maybe he just needs a little bit more time. And so if you go through all that, I think the width of our roster is wider than it was last year, without saying that the players that left us weren't good, but I think just in general, the structure of our roster just seems wider. Best example is we're sitting together before the game in Regensburg, and we have to actually nail down the roster to 20 people, and there was already 3 players that should have been in the roster, but they weren't, and there was no reason for it. Like we couldn't give the player a specific reason why they weren't in the roster, other than we have someone in that position already. And it was more 50-50 between you and him. So that, for now, shows me that the roster is deep enough to go through a season with 2 competitions. Unfortunately, it's only 2 now. Would have hoped it would have been 3. But I think that's something that they didn't have maybe in those seasons when they were relegated. Plus, I think we have players that were there in 2017 having the experience of going on national and then being relegated. So I think they're going to be aware of certain situations that might happen throughout the season that they recognize that maybe we didn't recognize, but the Jonas was there. Mm-hmm. So maybe he sees certain tendencies that he can make us aware of before they actually happen. So I think there's a lot of reason to believe that's not going to be a problem this year. But again, at the end of the day, it's soccer. So I can't promise anything, but I think we'll do everything for that not to happen.
Your coaching team as a whole really talked about the process of developing the team constantly, that it's going to be step by step by step. What do you see as the process, the thing that you want to really tackle in the coming season?
Good question. I think one, comparing last season to where we are right now, there's a lot of structure and a lot of processes that are already in place that we didn't have last year, and took a couple maybe games to figure certain things out. I mean, good example is the away game in Hoffenheim last year, where they destroyed us 5-0. There was some things we took out of that game that we don't have to take out this season. Not saying that this might not happen again, but in general, we've seen a lot of scenarios last year, given our playing style hasn't changed. So we have solutions to problems that we already faced last year. So I think that's something that helps us a lot, that we've seen many, many things. And what are we going to focus on? Maybe we'll have the ball a little bit more than last year. Maybe we have even more opportunity to transition the ball up front because we are better now at pressing. But the problem is that there's another team as well, and they're not sleeping. They're not stupid. They know how we play. So I think we're going to see a lot of more other problems that we don't even have on our radar yet. And I guess that's our job to see when they happen and then find solutions for it. But I think for now, we're in a good spot. And now we're just excited what the other teams have planned for us and then react to it.
Well, then let's go way back to the beginning. The US, you're going to Austin, Texas in November. Is that your influence? Were you one of the key people who masterminded that?
Nothing to do with it. Our old club, Paderborn, just went to the US, and from what I heard from them, it was a great experience for everyone. It's a great team building opportunity for the squad itself. I think a lot of players that haven't been to the States will see maybe a different perspective again. Maybe that will help us to maybe see some other things, put some things into relation to maybe things that are happening here. We do play a Bundesliga team over there, so but I think in general it's just an opportunity to show how we play soccer, maybe gain a couple fans, maybe have some fans being excited about the way we play, maybe have them watch it on the TV over there, and I guess just do that.
Before we end this, I have 6 quick questions for you, as I have for every guest. Which song is your favorite of the Steffen Baumgart playlist?
To explain, he listens to a lot of German music, Schlager, and other types of music, and I'm not the biggest fan of that type of music. So, but I don't want to say none, so I'm going to say Eye of the Tiger, which runs before the games for us.
Current obligations aside, which MLS club would you love to coach and why?
LAFC, and just because of the ownership, Will Ferrell.
Okay,
want to meet him.
What is your pre-game ritual?
There's a bunch. We would sit here for an hour. I can give you one. I always drink 3 specific types of this pre-game water that we get. One when I go out, one when I come in, and one before I go out, before the kickoff. Mm-hmm. But there's way more than that.
Your favorite misconception of U.S. soccer from a German perspective?
That it's a league just for old, retired players.
Kevin McKenna told us already a lot about the famous call center, your office space. One short anecdote that you would like to share, like a favorite memory or something from that?
We have it on film. I think that moment where Alex Verde came in last year for our carnival, and we've practiced this like heading back and forth and then trying to hit it in the bin, and it was actually the second take and it worked out. So that was kind of unbelievable.
And then last very quick question. If you had to take one person of FC players or staff to go surfing in Hawaii, who would it be?
Kevin McKenna. Because I don't think he would be good at it, and maybe it's something I can beat him in.
Thank you so much. That was René Wagner. Thank you so much for joining me. All that's left to say is good luck for the rest of the season.
Thank you.
And with that, we have reached the end of this episode. I hope you enjoyed the conversation with René Wagner. Again, sorry about the not-so-optimal audio quality. This episode was recorded on August
10th and released on August 17th, one day before FC Köln's home game against Fehervar FC in the playoffs for the European Conference League. And I am very optimistic that we will win this first game, the home game, and next week's away game. But let's see how things pan out. Kickoff for tomorrow is 8:30 p.m. Central European time. Tune in, or, well, if you're in the stadium, I envy you, and have a great time. If you have not listened to previous episodes of FC Uval, I highly recommend you check them out. They are available on Spotify, Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, etc. If you have a question, suggestion, or comments, or are a fan out there who would like to be on the show, reach out to me. The email is fcuval@gmail.com or via Twitter at fcuval. That is it for now. Thank you very much for listening. Take care, and as always...